We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Knicks Film School pregame show. My name is Andrew Claudio, a.k.a. GMAC, and it's time to preview the Knicks' upcoming matchup against the Philadelphia 76ers. Joel Embiid and James Harden are back in Madison Square Garden at 6 p.m. on Sunday night, and the Knicks are coming off of one of the more, it's weird to say devastating because they've had legitimate devastating losses this year. It feels like every loss is a heartbreaker. They can't just like lose a regular game by like 15. That Wizards loss from like 2 weeks ago, it felt like that was just they couldn't hit shots and they lost by double digits. They've had very few of those losses this year, at least since they went to this new rotation. And here they are coming off of one of the most inspired fourth quarter comebacks that the Knicks have had, especially this group has had, all leading to a rebound away. Yes, I know they could have fouled up by three. They also had a foul to give, and I don't think I wanted to give the Clippers an ATO opportunity the way that they were collapsing again for the second straight game. But that being said, the Knicks have a tall task ahead of them against one of the better teams in the NBA, one of the title contenders in this league, and a team that's 21-5 in their last 26 games. And who better to talk about them than one of the one half of the biggest niche NBA podcast. Now, look, I know we get a lot of credit and we get a lot of praise here at Knicks Film School. And it means the world when people say nice things about us. It doesn't go unnoticed. And honestly, it keeps us working hard. But something to chase is also something that keeps us working hard. And the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is forever ahead of us in the podcast charts. I have a ton of respect for what Spike Eskin and our guest today, Mike Levin, have been able to do with this Sixers podcast. You can read about it and its origin story in the book Tanking to the Top, the Philadelphia 76ers, the most audacious process in the history of professional sports. It's written by Yaron Weitzman, friend of the pod. And it's all about the Sixers process and how they built the team they currently have today. It came out like 3 years ago. So it might be time to reissue this book, Yaron, with an updated version of everything that's happened over the past couple of years. Nevertheless, Michael Levin of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is going to join me in just a second. We talked all about the Sixers and how the vibes are going in Philadelphia at the moment. And not necessarily just the Sixers, because the Phillies made the World Series. The Eagles are in the Super Bowl. If you're in New York, we hate it, but apparently the Empire State Building doesn't. This should be a fun conversation. I think you're going to enjoy. I even asked like Mr. Process what he thinks about what the Knicks are doing with completely throwing tanking out the window and doing everything to be mid. And I think you'll enjoy his answer. So without further ado, here is Mike Levin of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. Enjoy. Joining me now here on the Knicks Film School pregame show with the Philadelphia 76ers coming into town for the final game of this Knicks four-game homestand. It only made sense to go to one of the legends in the niche covering one single team NBA podcasting world. all of us are striving to be one of the forefathers of something. And wow, who else to get on this podcast to talk about the Philadelphia and the 76ers than one of the originators of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, Mr. Mike Levin. Welcome to the Knicks Film School podcast, sir.
Thank you so much. A forefather. I've never considered myself a forefather. Listen, but that ages me in a way that I feel uncomfortable about. But you know, I've been doing a podcast for 10 fucking years. So what am
listen,
I supposed
as
to
someone
say?
Who's only in year like three or four as yeah, mostly the producer and now starting to do hosting stuff. Wait, you've got years on me, so you're definitely a forefather, yeah, compared to me in the content world. I'll yeah, also say this: the way we read about our forefathers is like history books, right? Mm-hmm. And we get a lot of questions from our patrons all the time. Like, what made you be a Knicks fan? What made you decide to enter into this? I read about all your story in a book. So oh, wow. I could argue that a history book actually did teach me about your origin story, sir.
True enough. And, I have that book behind me as well. Tanking to the Top.
I'm sure you have it featured somewhere for prominently.
Sure. For sure.
Let's start with the Sixers because the vibes are immaculate right now. The last time the Knicks played the Sixers was on Christmas Day. And even then I was... It was funny that Knicks fans quibble about a lot of things, how the offense is, how the defense is, how, what the coach is doing. So again, everything. Mm-hmm. And yet my takeaway from that game was, oh, they have Joel Embiid and James Harden and we don't. And yeah, yes, like that, there can be things you quibble about in the margins, but talent will always win out. And I don't want to say that was the beginning of an ascension, but as I've watched the Sixers from afar, it seems like they've really started to put that contender status on full display. How are the vibes? Are you enjoying the fact that this two-man team is starting to really click and create some type of formidability for the rest of the season? Or is this still a season that starts in April?
I think it's a season that starts in April. Okay. I want to say that I believe that these guys are going to do, everybody just has so much to prove and they're not going to be able to prove it until we get to April, May, June. Mm-hmm. Whether it's Embiid, who's never gotten out of the second round of the playoffs, whether it's Harden, who's had a ton of playoff disappointments, even though some of it, you know, a few times haven't been on him. Doc Rivers, who a lot of Sixers fans are not big fans of, has had a ton of playoff meltdowns. And Daryl Morey, who for being the most famous GM, or at least one of them, at least most famous non-playing GM, hasn't gotten to an NBA Finals and has a lot to prove as well. And I think he would tell you the same thing. So it's hard to assume that it's just going to work out and they're going to like glide to the playoff success when they haven't been out of the second round of the playoffs since 2001.
Yeah, I have no experience with this as far as season starting in April. I'm quite enjoying the Knicks season so far this year, but I'm curious with that expectation then of it's not necessarily championship or bust, but you know, like the regular season matters a little bit less. What are you looking for over the next 5 days with the trade deadline being so close? What improvements do you see the Sixers needing to make?
Well, they're a deep team and they're not a deep team. Like we have, I would say the starting lineup is very good. PJ Tucker has been, a massive non-entity on the offensive end. And I would say for the most part, his defense is also disappointed after they signed him to a you know, 3 years, mm-hmm. Like $11 million per year deal at his age. But he's still, you know, he defended Jokic well, and that's like, that was enough of like a, in that moment, okay, we can hopefully trust him for when it counts in the 16 game season. After that, I mean, Maxey's now moved to the bench. He's very good. Shake Milton is a very good secondary ball handler. George Niang is extremely competent and really is one of the most trusted offensive players in this team. And then you have some like wild cards here and there, but the real issue is backup center. I know it's a luxury problem to have where that, you know, the guy that is going to play 8 minutes per game in the playoffs when Joel sits. But that's been the biggest issue year after year in the playoffs. I mean, the most easily identifiable time is in the Raptors series when Kawhi hit the four bounce game winner in game seven. But in Joel's minutes, they were like a plus 90 something. And mm-hmm. in the minutes he wasn't on the court, which was not very many, they were like a minus 100. And it's just like, that's just sort of how it's been forever with this team. And Montrezl Harrell, who is a guy that I liked early in his career, and I really liked him as a prospect, and he had some fun like pick and roll stuff with Williams in LA. He's bad now. He's very bad. He's one of the worst defenders in the league. His offense has, for the most part, evaporated. He has no lift on his dunks anymore. He doesn't have much touch on anything. Like, he's just bad. And Doc is going to keep playing him because he doesn't trust Paul Reed, who's the like sort of wild card. I was going to compare him to Mitchell Robinson, but he's less. He's more scatterbrained than that, but he makes some stuff happen. And at least he is a defense first prospect, which is what you need from a backup center. You just need to hold down the fort defensively. So it's weird to harp on backup centers much as we do, but I do it because that's if they can survive those minutes, then they should be in decent shape come the playoffs. But I need Daryl to make something happen in the next couple of days.
As far as the roster construction, specifically for the playoffs, is there a team you're eyeing that's like, we need this guy for two guard blank in the playoffs? Is there like what team at the top of the East? Because look, we're recording this a day after Kyrie shook up the world.
Yeah.
So I have no idea if Brooklyn's going to matter or not. I mean, that's obviously going to play itself out. But like, what teams? Obviously, you got the Celtics and you got whatever Brooklyn may be. You got Milwaukee. Is there a specific matchup you're eyeing for the playoffs?
I think if the Sixers solidify themselves into the top three and having to avoid Cleveland or Brooklyn or whatever's left of Brooklyn, then they should be in decent shape. Mm-hmm. Whether it's the Knicks or the Heat, although the Heat are obviously, you know, they were the one seed last year, and the Knicks are obviously going to fight you like hell. You still want to avoid those better teams. Mm-hmm. It's less, honestly, the Sixers could lose to the Pistons in the playoffs if Joel's backup sucks. Like, they're really impressive in their ability to lose those minutes by a lot, by an astounding margin in the playoffs. So that's less of a matchup dependent thing and more of just like a someone needs to protect the rim thing, which Trez doesn't do. As far as like the other needs, I'm looking at like, it'd be they're short on athleticism and they're short on like big wings. Everybody's looking for big wings. It's not like the Sixers aren't the only team doing that, but as far as 6'6 to 6'9 guys that can defend and shoot a little bit, it's really just Tobias Harris, who's not necessarily known as a defender, but has really worked himself into being a pretty decent defender over the last few years. PJ Tucker, who's 1,000 years old. Matisse Thybulle, who you can't really trust offensively, although we started to show him a little bit more flashes. So it's like, are they going to upgrade that like eighth or ninth rotation spot with a Matisse type player that you can trust a little bit more on the offensive end?
I had a question about Thybulle because go to cleaning the glass and you see the +6 on his resume, but you also see how very little minutes he's playing. What is
career
what is
low? The, I think.
Yeah, he's at 555 total for the season. Is he like not playing right now, or is he just not? Is he's too much of a liability on the offensive end?
You know, he's worked himself into being for Doc doesn't trust him as much as he probably should because. He fouls a little bit too much, although he's gotten that a little bit under control for at least. And he's not a good shooter. No one's going to think that he's electric from out there, but he really just needs to be a willing shooter. Mm-hmm. And he shoots 33% from three on the season. That's fine. Like that's totally fine. He just has to take those shots and not be a record scratch every time the ball gets swung to him. And the thing I really want him to do is just like, catch lobs, cut, be an offensive rebounding threat. Like he's crazy athletic. He's so light on his feet and he's long and he can just on the defensive end, he can impact the game so much, but it's really on the offensive end that you don't really trust him so much. But according to the numbers, like he's hugely helpful to winning games. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely would like to see him play a few more minutes. I would love PJ Tucker to take like a month off. Like there was a report earlier in the season that PJ Tucker is playing with a dead hand, which
that's
you need
what
your hands to be alive generally. So it was like, what's just take some time off, man. You're 37. Like you got a 3-year deal. You're not playing. Let's just like take some time. But he hasn't. I don't think he's played the most games of anybody on the Sixers this season, which is crazy for someone that's 37. And so I would love to see Matisse take some of those minutes away for a little, give, you know, they're going to be a top three seed almost certainly. So if you can give guys a rest here and there, give Melton a rest here and there, he's been really helpful to this team. Like, let's make sure everybody's fresh for the playoffs, especially Joel, obviously, who's never gone into the, you know, the 1 year he went into the playoffs healthy was the bubble season when Ben Simmons was not healthy and the team was pretty trash. Other than that,
you're actually doing a great job of helping me segue into
the
questions because I was going to ask about, I mean, you might be sick of talking about it, but this is the first time you're talking about it with me.
Sure, yeah.
The MVP race. And I'm sure in Philly, it's a hot button issue and I don't know how you feel actually, as far as Embiid and his chances are concerned, is it less important because of, look, I don't know how much of a lead Jokic has. And like last Saturday, we from afar were like, that has to matter that they played each other and he dominated. That has to matter toward the MVP race. But does it matter if Embiid, like, does he have to play out the string and go for getting his first MVP? Or do you think it's better for this team if he does like take some time off and make sure he's fresh for the postseason? Not like significant time off, but that he's, you know, he balances it out so that way you're not going balls to the wall until the end of the season.
Yeah, I don't know. I think after last year when he finished second in MVP for the second straight year to Jokic, he and kind of everybody seemed to just like write it off and just be like, well, it's not going to happen. So like, let's just not make it a thing anymore. Mm-hmm. But he came out this year after kind of like playing himself into shape and just like dominated. He had 59 against the Jazz. And then since then, he's just been like an automatic, like 30 and 10. And it's just crazy to go, you know, I started this podcast when the Sixers were doing the process, or even before then. And like nobody on the team scored 30, like ever. It was like, it was like multiple seasons between 30 point games from the Sixers. And obviously the NBA has changed since then. But for Embiid to just so casually drop 38 and just be like, oh, whatever, not even a good game for him, whatever, he's a special, special dude. But yeah, I mean, he's leading the NBA in scoring. He's still an incredibly impactful defender. He continues to improve as a passer. I think him and Harden have both over the last month or so really adapted their games to each other to blend nicely to hopefully be conducive to winning. The thing about the Jokic Embiid thing is like, it's very close and it was close last year. And I'm not an MVP voter, like whatever, but like if it's close, if it's a toss up, it just feels like you should give it to the guy that hasn't had it before. Like it just seems, it just seems like, isn't that reasonable? Like, I don't know. Like maybe I'm too like, fair of a person, or like I'm treating it like it's, like treat like kids, like everybody shares, like kids should share the fuck, whatever, the donuts, and everybody shouldn't just get all the donuts. But it's just like, it's a toss up. If it's a toss up, then like Jokic hasn't been three times of MVP better than Embiid over the last 3 years. If you think he's been a little bit better, then that's fine. So let it be 2-1. It doesn't matter that much, but it matters to Joel. So it matters to me.
I completely understand. And look, outsider's perspective, look, so the advanced numbers, I think, are always going to lead Jokic because of what he does for the offense in Denver. I also think there are some defensive numbers that lean Embiid. So you can understand both sides of the coin. It's less about if you think, because like if you talk to the data-driven people, it's of course Jokic. It's a far and away thing. It's less about like giving him a third MVP because he deserves it. It's the historical ramifications of giving him three, like him and Larry Bird. Yeah. Would be in the same conversation, and Larry Bird was making it to the finals every year.
Right.
So then the pressure that goes on Jokic to get out of the second round, not in Disney World, will be, you know, really important. So it feels wrong to have like Embiid's whole career in this run have not won MVP to his resume. You know,
I think too, you know, Jokic has been to a conference finals, even if it was at Disney. Like Embiid hasn't had that playoff success. He's coming to the playoffs banged up. Every time, or like, you know, he breaks his face on Pascal Siakam's shoulder or elbow. A couple of years before that, he broke his face on Markelle Fultz's shoulder. In the Toronto series, he had like extreme gastroenteritis. Like he was just like, he's just never been fully healthy for it. And I think some people would like slap the like injury prone label on him, but like it hasn't been like the reason Embiid missed the first two seasons of his career,
right,
because of like foot and back issues. And those haven't been the issues that have been keeping him out of the, like out of being a healthy for the playoffs. So it's just been like weird stuff. Because that's, you know, I think every team thinks that they're weird, but the Sixers are really weird. They're a really very weird franchise for many years.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's, I think Jokic is clearly a better offensive player than Embiid. It's not a question, but Embiid is leading the NBA in scoring. So he's not a bad offensive player.
Mm-hmm.
And Embiid is clearly a better defensive player than Jokic. And so it's just like, Embiid could win, you know, he could win defensive player of the year. No one's going to think about Jokic for defensive player of the year. So I think it's, if you think Jokic is a better player, that's fine, but it's inarguable that it's like very close, and it's certainly not 3-0 close.
Again, I think gun to my head right now, I think I would go Jokic this season. Again, it's the historical ramifications,
right,
of giving him a third MVP. I just don't want base. I just don't want this to become baseball. Mike Trout is by every number like the best baseball player ever. Mm-hmm. I don't have a postseason memory of him. And what basketball has done a good job of in its history is the guys who win the MVP matter at the end of the postseason too.
Yeah.
And I'm curious how that might play out.
Yeah, I think that matters. And I think it also matters. Like people want to pretend like the MVP is just like, I'm strictly looking at the data and I'm making a contextless decision of like, who was the most valuable player this season? It's like, no, you're not. Like, you're not doing that. There's a ton of narratives that go into everything and all your decisions, and it's all about feel. And you can, the numbers are just one, like those advanced numbers are just one part of it. Mm-hmm. And a valuable part of it, but it shouldn't be all of it. And the fact that, you know, I think the fact that Giannis was, you know, a skinny, like out of nowhere prospect from like a second, you know, a mid-tier league in Greece, like was that factored into like people wanting to root for him. And I think Jokic being a second round pick and like not being traditionally athletic looking, factored into people wanting to root for him and wanting to vote for him. And I don't think Embiid gets that kind of credit. I don't know why. I think maybe people think he's like a joke because of like his online presence and stuff, which is, you know, for the most part tamped down after his first couple of years. But he's had an incredible story. He missed the first 2 years of his career. And his brother died like very soon after like him being told he was out for the season. Like he almost quit basketball altogether. Like he didn't start playing basketball until he was 15. It really is a special, special dude. And he's had to endure last season, especially doing what he did with Ben Simmons holding out the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's just endured a lot, and he's been a rock for this franchise. And is there other things that he can get better at? Absolutely. Are there ways he can handle himself better in situations? Like, absolutely. Does he have to prove it in the playoffs? 100%. But I mean, he's great. He's fucking great. He's the man. And I, you know, as if Knicks fans don't like him, I totally get it.
It's quite the opposite. We're hoping that, and listen, I say this with love, we're hoping that the Philadelphia season crashes and burns, because maybe potentially Embiid will be the next guy to ask out. And you know, they have this whole treasure chest of picks that they're trying to trade to somebody.
Yeah.
So whether that's a pipe dream or not will depend on how the season goes.
Sure. That's fair. I won't hold that against you.
For over 30 years, the law offices of Weiss and Rosenblum in New York City has been home to a team of award-winning, hard-hitting injury attorneys who have a long track record of seven-figure results. Whether you've been injured in a car accident, fall, construction accident, or other traumatic event, Weiss and Rosenblum will work tirelessly to maximize the award regardless of the severity of your injury and get you and your family the fair and just compensation you deserve. Call Weiss and Rosenblum today at 212-366-6100. Again, that's 212-366-6100, or visit weissandrosenblum.com for more information. No case is too big or too small. Personal attention to your matter is a priority. Once more, call 212-366-6100. Previous results do not guarantee future outcomes. If you think you might have a case, speak with a veteran attorney, not a rookie.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data,
and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Another guy that probably has some beef with the MVP voting body is James Harden. And I'll just be honest with you. I've poked fun at some of his playoff disappointments in the past, and I think he is absolutely somebody that's going to need to win something in the postseason. And this could be the year that he does it, with Embiid being the guy that more so carries him. While I will think, would imagine he'd have a something to do with their success in the playoffs. But then you get game six last year, and I'm assuming the Philadelphia faithful did not react to that second half. Where are you with James Harden right now? Is what he's doing in the regular season, which was borderline all-star worthy? Does it matter? Or again, with him, is it like, we're going to need you to make an evaluation of you come April and May?
I mean, I think everybody feels that on some level, but thus far he's been great this season. Okay. The defense is still what it is. He'll fall asleep off ball. He'll, you know, wave at guys dribbling by him and stuff. Occasionally he'll get in a stance and lock up and stuff. And he is capable of doing that. But he's having the best shooting season of his career, mm-hmm. at least for outside shot. He's almost at 40% on high volume. He's been more willing to take catch and shoot threes, which is something that he hasn't done in the past his whole career, really. When you're playing off a guy that commands a double team like Joel, like, you need to be able to do that. He's not like cutting off ball. Like, he's not doing a ton of that stuff, but you know, he's one of the best, if not the best passer in the league, as far as just like being a pick and roll maven. He gets the ball to Joel where he needs it. He makes life really easy on Joel a lot of the time. And for as much as like he's been labeled, you know, a whether it's a distraction or whether it's him like not being a good locker room guy, like, he's been great here. Like, there hasn't been any like real issues. There was a weird report that he might go back to Houston, which was kind of bizarre, mm-hmm. but it seemed like that either wasn't really true or it was a consideration or it got tamped down. But like, he seems all the way in. Him and Joel seem to really like each other and want to make it work with each other. And they know, or at least they should know, I'm projecting for sure, but they should know that like they need each other. Like, they need each other. James needs Joel to like validate his career in some way, to get, you know, he's 33. He's not gonna get better after this. He's certainly not like the 27-year-old version of Harden, but like, he's still very good. So like, while he's still contributing and not like an afterthought as like a 37, 38-year-old or whatever, like, him getting to the finals, him really making a big playoff run, would be huge. And Joel, just like, as for as good as he is and impressive as he is as a ball handler, and getting to the rim and driving by guys and shooting around double teams and getting fouled like crazy, all that stuff. Like, he needs someone to get him the ball in the right spots, and he needs guys to run offense, because we've seen too many times in the playoffs, like when double teams get sent at him from a crazy, from like different angles, or like the Raptors from a couple years ago, or the Bucks sometimes, that although they haven't played each other in the playoffs, he can get a little bit rattled and a little bit like start to force it and stuff. And so right now, their bread and butter is just pick and roll with Joel going to the nail and getting easy. Like, Joel shoots like 50% on like mid-range jump shots. It's crazy. He's unbelievable. And for as much attention as he gets to be that good, but right now they both need each other. And it'd be really nice if this was the year they made the run. It would be really nice for them and for me personally.
I was going to say personally. Yeah. To your point about how good he's been offensively this season, just some numbers from cleaning the glass: 125.3 points per shot attempt, which is in the 92nd percentile. And then he's in the 100th percentile on assist percentage. So not only is he like making the most of his shot attempts, but everything he as far as setting up his teammates as well is also it's why I'm curious how great he's been this regular season, how the Philadelphia fan base is experiencing it, which leads to a question: are you superstitious at all?
Totally
100%, so
yeah,
do you believe that like things come in threes, that superstition, that that things seem to happen three at a time?
Not necessarily. I'm a comedy writer, so it'd be more like the third thing is that you flip it on the third thing. So if you're talking about like the Phillies go to the World Series,
the Eagles need to lose the Super Bowl. So that way the Sixers can win.
I don't know. I think it would be like more like Phil's World Series, Eagles Super Bowl, Sixers, like, get into a major bus accident or something.
Oh no.
Like that would be more of the thing that how I would envision it to happen.
Okay. So,
but to your point, like the fact that things have like the Phillies run was crazy and very fun for us. If the Mets made that run, I wouldn't think it was fun at all.
For you, it was
fun. I wouldn't think it was fun.
I won 100 games and didn't even win the division. Okay. Yeah,
I get it. Yeah. I feel you. And the Eagles Super Bowl run has been excellent, and they're just a very, very good team. Maybe the best, maybe just the best, like at their peak, the best Philadelphia team of my lifetime, these Eagles, when they're rolling, at least.
I currently have their money line.
Now
who you're talking about.
So during the times that the Sixers have struggled this season, there's been a little bit of air cover from that, but also it's prevented them from like, they've won 21 of their last 26 games. Mm-hmm. I think it's the current situation, and it hasn't reached like a fever pitch with the fan base yet, because they're a little distracted. And it also feels like we've been there. Like, the Sixers have been since Joel's second season playing. He missed his first 2 years, and then he played like 33 games
31
his second 31 games the second yeah. his third season, and then has been pretty much healthier in the 60s ish ever since then. Like, they've just been a top four seed in the East, and they haven't gotten out of the second round. And so that's been many years of that. And so I think everybody's a little bit just like, please give us a reason to believe. And they won't be able to do that until April, May.
Yeah. I, again, would love to know what that feels like, because New York is not seen.
Yeah.
So the Mets made the World Series in 2015. The Rangers made the Stanley Cup in 2014. It's back to like, the Giants won the Super Bowl in 2011. That's the last time New York has experienced any kind of like parade in that sense. I think the Eagles are going to win the Super Bowl, but I'm not about to say that. Like, I'm confident they're going to be Pat Mahomes. Sure. How do you feel? Mahomes.
I mean, I feel okay. I think it's gonna be a great game. I think Chiefs are obviously very good. The fact that it's Andy Reid.
And the Kelsey Bowl
and the Kelsey brothers. The Kelsey brothers is fun. The Andy thing is like emotional, because that's the coach I grew up with, and he was, you know, he went to four straight NFC championships and felt like it was never able to get over the hump. And I was happy for him that he won one in Kansas City. I'm happy that it came after we had won one, which would have been tough if it hadn't been. But yeah, I think it's just gonna be very good. It should be a fun game. I hope it's a very like high powered game, and I want, you know, Eagles have one of the best defensive lines. I hesitate to say defensive lines ever, but like, they certainly have the most the four guys with over 10 sacks, which is the first time that's ever happened. And so it's pretty wild that there is a, they can get to the quarterback as well as they can. So I do want like Pat Mahomes' fucking head on a spike for just this week.
What'll be interesting is if you win the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. that's the validation you need to say greatest something ever.
Yeah. That's fair.
So you like the upset that like Brady gets his seventh, but that was mm-hmm. mostly a defensive line mm-hmm. dominating and chasing Mahomes around mm-hmm. for 60 minutes. So they're able to call it one of the greatest upsets ever mm-hmm. In that sense. But look, I'm not going to say I'm necessarily rooting for you. I know the Empire State Building is.
Sure, yeah.
Which yes. we're still kind of confused about what that was. But
pretty interesting, yeah.
I wish you luck in that sense. Last question. I hope it's not too uncomfortable to talk about the rights to Ricky Sanchez. And like I joked around at the beginning, but there's a quote from, if you read the book, you know this, everybody, your old roommate, Andrew Sharp, mm-hmm. that it's like, you guys don't take yourselves too seriously, but at the same time, you take this stuff way too seriously.
Yeah.
How do you feel all these years later that like you start with Hinkie in the process and those years, and then like, again, we're talking potentially finals runs. Are you still able to enjoy it as like a fan, or has like the content creator more taken over that you're like, I need to know what I'm saying and the influence that my take is going to have?
No, definitely still a fan.
Okay.
Definitely, maybe to my own detriment, don't look at it like a content creator at all.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I just, for whatever very bad reason, really give a shit. Mm-hmm. There's not, you can make up whatever reason that you have to be like, well, my dad got me into this, or my sisters are always big fans, whatever it is. Like, and this was special and I knew from that moment, whatever, but like, this is dumb. This is dumb. It's dumb to be a sports fan. And I spend so much of my time talking and thinking about the Sixers in very like specific, often stupidly highbrow ways. And you just have to, you know, we've been fortunate enough to have like, you know, 10 years of relative success, and we have sponsors and we're still independent. And it's just like, it's cool that we got to hire some people to make some money to talk about this weird ass franchise. So it's just like, I feel very lucky that I get to do it, and that it gets to be part of my life. And I've been doing this podcast since I was in my early 20s. I was writing and like running Liberty Ballers, which was an SB Nation blog, since I was like 19 or 20. So it's just been, most of my adult life has been this like sort of side thing, the Sixers, like that most people, you know, in my regular job are like unaware of or vaguely aware of, that they're like, you also do that. What is this? Like, it's just, it's an odd, it's not like secret side life, the most like boring, Bruce Wayne, Batman possible. But it's, you know, I really like, I can't imagine them like doing it. And I've thought about like the Phillies won the World Series in 08. That was awesome. That was the first championship of my life. Although I was rooting for the Carmelo Syracuse team, because my brother went to Syracuse.
Oh, okay.
And then the Eagles 5 years ago, which was incredible and a wild feeling. But like the Sixers are the one for me. And it happening would change me in ways that I can't even imagine. And validate so many bad decisions I've made in my life, and so much time that I've spent doing this goddamn thing. But, you know, I don't know. It's weird. It's hard to extricate who I am from the role the Sixers play in my life, because like, it's been so intertwined for so long. It's a very, unnecessarily emotional thing.
No, it makes sense at the same time, because like you said, they're intertwined. That's why you care, you know, because yeah. you care. It's probably why people have gravitated toward you and Spike the way that they have. We, to obviously a lesser extent, audience wise, have gotten some of that. And yet when the Knicks had this, they call it the We Here season. I shouldn't say they. We call it the We Here mm-hmm. season mm-hmm. from 2 years ago, where Julius Randle was making every long two.
Yeah.
And Derrick Rose was helping us get the almighty four seed. And that was the first season, like we were all still stuck inside. And yeah. like, the best compliment we've gotten is because it had a lot to do with some of our success and getting us noticed a bit, was like it getting to enjoy that with you was meant so much, you know? And I think that is part of why I still care. And yet, like, there will still be, like, the Knicks lost the game to the Lakers the other night. And the next day, I was just like, damn, they should have won that one. And it's still something you care about, which I'm happy to hear that 10 years later, it's still something that you care about, you know?
Yeah. I wish I didn't. I wish I was I wish I was more cynical about it and go like, ah, whatever, I make money off it and it's fine and they're great. But sometimes some games I can like handle it. I find that if I watch a game on delay, I'm something about not watching it live makes me less emotional about it. But some nights I'm just like, this is ruining my night. These people are ruining my fucking night. I'm a grown up and it shouldn't be the case, but they are and they will. So, you know, I get that monkey off my back come May, June.
We shall see. Mike, you've been great. Thank you for joining me for the pregame show. The Knicks take on the 76ers on Sunday night at 6 PM. I actually realize I have one more question and it's more like from your perspective, Mr. Process, how do you view what the Knicks are doing this year? They're kind of built a team that's destined to be mediocre while we've embraced the mid on our side. Cause like, we don't mind watching them win like 40 something games.
Yeah.
What do you think of how the Knicks are doing and what their plan seems to be of like be in the middle and then trade for the star to go from the middle up rather than tank to the top?
Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of guys on the Knicks I like. Mm-hmm. I love Quentin Grimes. I actually really hated him at Kansas and he was a very mediocre player. And then he transferred to Houston and just totally transformed his game and became like such a more impactful defender. And I love, like, I think he tightened up his jump shot and really gets good lift on it. I was just like, I like seeing that growth and that development. And so I've been rooting for him for a few years. And obviously Jalen Brunson, Nova guy, like one of the most unstoppable college teams of all time in 2018.
Eagles fan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like Mitch at first, but like he's grown on me and I like Mitch and I have Julius Randle on my fantasy team. So that's very nice. It's interesting. I'm marrying a Lakers fan and have been with her for a long time. And so there's an assumption in the Lakers that like, oh yeah, like we're bad and we're doing stupid shit, but like somebody's going to come. And the Knicks have obviously been saying that for so long and it hasn't happened.
Nope.
But this
Jalen
is
Brunson. That's it. That's your game. Jalen Brunson.
Just hire his dad and then somebody
and
else.
And his godfather. Come. Yes.
And his godfather. But I think that, you know, that there's a similar, like eventually it'll happen. In a way that you couldn't assume that for the Sixers. You can't assume that if you're the Hornets or the, you know, the Bucks or whatever. You can't just assume that somebody's just going to come because of who we are. And so the Knicks for a long time, obviously didn't even live up to like decent enough to draw that. And maybe it'll take selling the team or whatever, but you still like the Lakers. You still have that glamour mentality where at least you can, if you look fun and you look decent and in the playoff run you guys had and in the Hawks series and everything, it seemed like Knicks basketball was back. Mm-hmm. So eventually somebody's going to come and I'm not going to like it, but it's not going to be Joel Embiid. It makes the middle makes more sense for you guys than it did for us because no one was ever just going to be like, I'm choosing this 41 win Philadelphia team to be a superstar on. It just wasn't going to happen. And so they had to take a couple bites at the apple and we got Joel out of it.
There you go. Well, I don't wish you luck in a game tomorrow night, but being able to empathize, I'll say, with being a tortured sports fan, like the Mets losing this season after what was one of the more enjoyable seasons.
Yeah,
it was legit like a week before I could watch baseball again. And so I empathize and wish you luck throughout this playoff run. And who knows, maybe good things will come in threes in the sense that the Eagles and the Sixers will end up getting the monkey off their back this year. Mike, if you don't mind, it might sound silly, but some people may need to know this. Where can they find you on the internet and plug?
Sure. I'm on Twitter, Michael_Levin. I co-host the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. We also have a website, rightsrickysanchez.com, where we have a bunch of great folks writing some stuff for us. And I'm melting down on all those places. At all times. And I will say, just people choosing New York, you know, Breanna Stewart, Courtney Vandersloot, Jonquel Jones. That's a big deal. Liberty's going to be great this year.
Very
I was texting
big deal.
Our friend Seth Rosenthal about how good they look and how good they're going to be. So Philadelphia doesn't have a WNBA team, so I feel like I'm adopting the Liberty this season. So I'm excited about that.
So there's your three. Your big,
there you go. Yes, it's not going to be the Sixers. It'll be the Liberty. I'll count that. Yeah.
There you go. Mike, thanks again. Thanks for coming, man.
Thank you, man.
Once again, thank you to Mike Levin of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast for coming on today's show to help me preview the Knicks matchup against the Philadelphia 76ers. It's funny. He mentioned that line about, for some reason, he gives a shit. And for some reason, he still cares about it in ways he probably shouldn't. And if that isn't what makes sports fans like us so unique, that for some reason, we give a shit. And the ironic part, to give you a little behind the scenes, Mike and I recorded this interview at halftime of the Knicks game. He is free at 8 o'clock my time and 5 p.m. West Coast time, which is where he is. And I was like, okay, yeah, you give a shit. That's great. And then here I am sitting here recording this intro and outro, and the Knicks just lost the heartbreaker, and I give a shit. And it's why I'm able to understand what that feels like. Not to the levels of like playoff losses, because believe me, I want to know what that feels like to lose a heartbreaking playoff loss. I haven't had that since, I have once in 2013, and then, you know, throughout the entire 90s. But I wish Mike the best of luck as a tortured sports fan. As a New York sports fan, I wouldn't mind laughing a little bit more, but I can at least understand if the Sixers do win, that there's one tortured sports fan out there that will appreciate it. And I hope you'll be able to appreciate that as well. If you're like me, though, you probably will lean more toward the laughing like we do here at Knicks Film School. That'll do it for me. If you dig the show, head over to iTunes, drop a 5-star rating and a review. John, I'll be back after the game tonight with APJP. Hopefully it's a W. If it's a loss, be nice, be kind, be rational. Let's hope it's not a heartbreaking loss, but instead, you know what? Let's hope it's a triumphant win over the Philadelphia 76ers. Hopefully you enjoy the game tonight, everybody. Until next time, thank you for listening. Enjoy the game, and I'll speak with you soon. Peace.